some other musical stuff.
This is Gunther and Band in the Afternoon on 1320 KFAN, Utah's sports leader.
Thursday, he's Kyle Gunther, I'm Ben Anderson, and you all know the Utah Jazz, because they look exactly like they did yesterday.
Oh, man, it was a very active trade deadline for the Jazz when it came to storylines and potential discussions and stories being leaked, and the Jazz were listening to offers for Derek Favors. They were potentially back in the market for the services of Deron Williams, and the Jazz decided to remain what they already were, which was a very good competitive roster, a playoff-caliber team fighting from anywhere for that 4-6 seed in the West. And depending on how you look at it, if the Jazz do fall to the 6th seed, it might be a better opening-round playoff matchup for them. So there's a lot of advantageous situations still left ahead for the Jazz, and there wasn't a deal the Jazz just felt like jumping at.
I don't think the Jazz made a mistake today by not making a move. I do think some teams around them got better, including a team they may face off with in the first round. That's the Houston Rockets. They made a couple of deals. Most importantly, they got Lou Williams a couple of days ago. So I think the Jazz, in that sense, made a smart move by not going crazy, not trying to hurt the roster. But at the same point, I think a couple of the teams around them got better. Even Oklahoma City, the Thunder, got better today. They acquired Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott from the Chicago Bulls for very little in return. So there's some teams that did some things well. I wouldn't hammer the Jazz. This was not a sense of urgency trade deadline where the Jazz had to make a move to accomplish something. I think they sat on it. They were fine. They've got a bunch of assets still to use this offseason. And now there's still a couple of things the Jazz could do before the end of the year. They could still extend Derek Favors' contract if they wanted to. You could do the same thing for George Hill, the starting point guard right now. And they can do that before the end of the year, before anyone else gets a chance to sign them. And obviously Derek Favors doesn't come up for free agency until the summer of 2018. So there's still some options for the Jazz. They could waive players, try and sign some players. We'll see what they do from here.
Well, we got to get to the bottom of Derek Favors' emoji gate first. And that was, of course, the fire that started late last night. Derek Favors tweeted an emoji face. And the emoji face was the one where the guy's grabbing his chin and sort of looking awkwardly up into the air as if he's pondering something. Now, I never thought I'd be describing an emoji to set up a story until I read Andy Larson do it this morning in KSL. He gave us the emoji breakdown, and it was interesting to hear even Andy break down, you know, what type of technology here we're talking about, what this new level of interaction means. We are reading into a player tweeting an emoji.
Sure.
And in fact, Derek Favors was asked about the emoji, and he said, it's just a tweet.
It's just Twitter.
He said it's a Twitter.
He said it 10 times, though. He said, it's just a tweet. I just tweeted.
He said,
I actually think he probably meant something by it.
Oh, maybe he did mean something by it. Maybe he didn't. Isn't it so unique that this is the first generation of athletes who can tweet out an emoji, one emoji, and seemingly get across his feelings?
We saw Paul George do it. We saw Isaiah Thomas do it. We saw a couple of guys do it and think, oh, it's on. Now, there have been famous emoji tweets in the past. We all remember DeMarcus Cousins, now of the New Orleans Pelicans, tweet out a snake and then the grass emoji when he was talking about his head coach, George Karl.
He was calling him a snake in the grass. Which, I mean, it's pretty obvious what he meant there, but, you know, that's the power of the emoji
today. Little
on today.
The nose, Boogie.
Enes Kanter, now with the Thunder, formerly of the Jazz, was asked about the trade deadline, and he joked that, well, you got to make sure you're nice to the fans.
Yeah.
Because especially a fan base like the Jazz, they're a passionate group, and they didn't do anything wrong to Enes Kanter. Enes didn't necessarily trash the Jazz on his way out, but, you know, he was a little too excited leaving town. It was just such a weird situation with him. He's a unique player, a guy that clearly didn't fit in here, whereas Derek Favors clearly does fit in with this team. No one wanted to see him go, but the conversation for the Jazz was about maximizing his overall value. And not just his value, but the value of the power forward position. It is a market that is high on supply right now, low on demand in most cases for most of these guys. The Jazz realized that, But Derek Favors now has to be aware this is the 10th time his name has been mentioned in trade rumors throughout his career. He's got to get used to dealing with this.
And look, it can't be fun. He was talked about it a couple of years ago when the Jazz were rumored to be trying to trade up to the number one pick with the Cleveland Cavaliers to take either Andrew Wiggins or Jabari Parker. Favors' name and Hayward's name were kind of both tossed around at that point. Obviously, right after he got drafted by the Nets, his name was being thrown around with Carmelo Anthony or with Deron Williams, and he ended up getting traded there. But, I mean, that's got to thicken your skin a little bit, but it's also got to make you a little bit callous towards your own team, towards the NBA, and I'm sure Derek Favors is at that point. The hope for the Jazz is here on out. Everyone stays professional. Everyone plays hard. They're all trying to continue their careers, make the playoffs, and have a good run this season, which really ups the value of everybody. Speaking of upping the value for everyone, since the Jazz are still $4 million under the salary cap floor this year, everybody on the Jazz roster today essentially got a $260,000 raise because the Jazz have to reach that salary floor and they have to dispense that to all 15 players on the team. So if anyone was mad about hearing their name tossed around at the trade deadline, Shelvin Mack, Derek Favors, etc., you just got a $250,000 bonus today by not getting traded.
And they just distribute that number evenly? Is that how it works?
At the end of the year, yeah, they give it out to every player evenly.
$260,000 for getting your name mentioned right now.
It's pretty good.
You know, that's one way to look at it. It's also, what is that, $9 million the Jazz have left to spend to get to the salary cap. It's $9 million in higher quality players
right.
The Jazz could have gone after, and that's the gamble that you have to go through. There's a reason why there is a salary basement in professional
right.
sports to prevent teams from filling out a roster like the San Diego Padres, where their entire roster
sure.
makes less than Derek Jeter or
Alex
Rodriguez.
The Houston Astros did that a couple of years ago, yeah, where the whole team made $40 million or something ridiculous.
And there's a reason why for professional leagues and teams, it's not a good look to do that. It's a greedy look to do that at times. That's the whole point of the movie Major League, or at least one of the many interesting plot lines of the movie Major League,
right.
along with Charlie Sheen. But you know, when the Jazz have to spend that money at the end of the year, yeah, it's great for the guys currently on the roster, but it's a big gamble when you do that. It's a very confident move to say that, all right, you know, we still have $9 million to spend, but we feel like this roster is good enough.
I've asked Dennis Lindsay about this. I've never felt like I've gotten a totally square answer of whether or not the Jazz now being, again, they're going to bump their salary up to $84 million by the end of the year. That's the salary cap floor. And then I think you're right, there's another $13 million, or maybe it's $94 million, and then there's another $13 million before you get to the actual luxury cap or the salary cap in that sense. Does that money basically, in the Millers view, go into a bank account that the Jazz can then go out and spend later? I mean, did they save $13 million today, and does that just get cashed out by the Jazz, or do they feel like that's an asset moving forward that they can use if they have to go over the salary cap for a year to bring back Derek Favors, Gordon Hayward, Rudy Gobert, George Hill, Rodney Hood, etc.? Is that something the Jazz are comfortable doing?
Well, that's a very fluid question, and it's a hard question to answer because it could mean there could have different answers
sure.
at different times and different situations. The Jazz, like every professional team, they're trying to make money, but you also have to put together the best unit possible. And a guy like Gordon Hayward is factoring in all these different decisions when he's talking about what's going to happen this summer when he opts out. There's going to be a handful of teams at least offering Gordon Hayward a max salary along with the Jazz, and they could all offer him an incredible opportunity on the floor, off the floor. There's a lot to be sold here, but the number one thing that the Jazz have, and that Gordon Hayward has with the Jazz, is that they know how each other operates.
Right.
The Jazz know his ceiling, and Gordon Hayward knows the Jazz ceiling in a lot of ways. He knows how the front office works. He has candid conversations with his agent, with the coaches, with the front office. These have all happened before, and these have all shaped the way Gordon Hayward views this organization. Now, Gordon Hayward is more than likely to sit here and stay and finish his career as a Jazz man. I think that's the most likely scenario. But these types of details are adding into the conversation when Gordon Hayward sits down and realizes, man, not only have we missed the playoffs, but we're not even filling out the roster
right.
as fully as we could.
Right. There's money out there to be spent. We're not necessarily doing it. The advantage for the Jazz is that they've built around Gordon Hayward, and he realizes that he's been made a priority in that sense. If he goes to Boston this offseason or wherever he goes, the likelihood is they will still continue to build around either Isaiah Thomas or their first-round draft pick that they have from the Brooklyn Nets this year, which is going to be the pick 1 through 4. So that is something that Gordon Hayward would have to wrap his mind around, that maybe the team wouldn't necessarily focus their game plan towards what he does best, which is going to be flattering if you're a Jazz player. It's also worth noting Boston didn't make a major trade today. They didn't get either Paul George or Jimmy Butler, so there is still that small forward opening with the Boston Celtics, where, again, I would imagine Dennis Lindsay, Gordon Hayward, unless Boston makes a trade on draft night coming up in late June, I would imagine Gordon Hayward gets an interview with the Boston Celtics to see what type of a fit he will be as a free agent. Let's welcome in our next guest, continuing to talk about the Utah Jazz at the trade deadline. Find him on Twitter at TripJazz. Read him in the Salt Lake Tribune. He's our 1320K fan, Utah Jazz insider. It is Tony Jones. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Tony!
What's up, guys?
Tony, surprised at the deadline the Jazz didn't make any moves?
I'm a little surprised because I think, you know, I knew going in that they didn't want to surrender a rotation player in any type of deal. I knew that, you know, Derek Favors going out, it was going to have to take a significant offer. None of that materialized, but I did think that they would do something around the periphery, maybe bring a player in where they didn't have to, where they could have just taken on some salary. Done something like that. Sorry, I'm on the train. But if not, I mean, I just thought that they would have done something like that, and they just kind of stood pat.
Was it ever a serious possibility for the Jazz to reunite with Deron Williams this year?
I don't think so. I think he's probably going to go to Cleveland, like has been reported out there. You know, I think that the Jazz, they really like what Dante Exum's doing, and, you know, more than one person in the organization has told me that, you know, from now and in this summer, they don't want to stunt his growth. They want to keep him on an upward trajectory. They still really think that they have something there, potentially. So I don't anticipate Deron Williams coming.
Tony, when you look at this Jazz roster, do you think these are the 15 players they have the rest of the way? Will they buy anyone out, waive anybody to try and get in a situation where they can either sign another player off of waivers or bring in some 10-day contracts?
Well, the one thing Dennis Lindsay told me was that he didn't want to make any additions at this time or deletions at this time. So, you know, I would imagine that this is the 15 that they're rolling with, unless they get a deal that's, you know, kind of hard to turn down. In terms of a buyout option or something like that. But other than that, I think that they're going to go with this team. They like this roster. They like the chemistry of this roster. And the big significant thing is they haven't seen this roster healthy for very long, and I think that they want to take a stock at that. They're going to be fully healthy going into to Milwaukee tomorrow, and they want to see if they can stay healthy and see what kind of team they have when they are healthy.
Does Rodney Hood expect to be 100% healthy tomorrow heading into that game against Milwaukee?
Yeah, he's going to be back, and he told me last week that you know, the reason why he was out through the All-Star break was just so that he could get the extra time off so he could get his knee right. So he's going to be healthy, and he's going to be back in the lab tomorrow.
Tony Jones is our guest, 1320K fan. What about the health of George Hill? Did the fact that his toe has kind of been hot, not hot, he seems to miss time kind of randomly, did that play into the fact that the Jazz didn't trade Shelvin Mack?
Yeah, I think that they wanted as much depth as possible, and I think that you're right, the toe has been an issue for George Hill on and off. It'd be interesting to see how it looks for him now that he's had a week off kind of to rest things. But I think he is healthy in terms of being able to play. I'm interested to see where his explosion is, to see if he resembles more of the October-November George Hill than the George Hill that we've been seeing of late.
Are the Jazz more likely to be chasing the Clippers here for the last few games, or are they more worried about Memphis potentially passing them? What's a bigger issue in your opinion?
Well, I think the rule of thumb is that you always look up. So I think that the Jazz are going into the second half of the season tomorrow with the thought process of chasing the Clippers. And, you know, there's going to be movement on that one way or the other tonight because the Clippers play at the Golden State Warriors. So, you know, they could very well go into tomorrow in a virtual dead tie, and the Clippers play tomorrow night as well. So, you know, I think that, you know, you always look up, you don't look behind you enough. So I think that the Jazz thought process in this is that they're going to be trying to chase that home court advantage.
Tony, one of the things the Jazz still have some flexibility to do before the end of the season is work on those contracts of George Hill and Derek Favors. Do you think they're going to make an effort to do that now that they know how much money they have or won't be spending by the end of the season? Will they try and ink those guys to longer deals in season?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen with either one of those guys. Derek hasn't been healthy enough and consistently for the Jazz to do it. And George Hill's camp, they've always wanted to hit free agency. So I don't see it happening with either one of those guys. I think that both of those guys, I think that George Hill is going to be an unrestricted free agent in the offseason. And I think that Derek's going to enter the offseason as an expiring contract for next year.
Did Gordon Hayward pick up on any new habits? Should fans expect any different style from him after playing in the All-Star game, or does Gordon Hayward just maintain what he's always done?
No, I think the All-Star game itself was a throwaway for him. I think that what he did pick up was just the fact that, hey, I belong here. So I think that there could be an extra confidence thing with him in terms of that. But in terms of just on the floor, I think that the All-Star game was just kind of a throwaway for him. I mean, he likened it to a pickup game at the YMCA. That was the comparison that he used when I asked him. So I think, you know, the air of confidence is definitely going to be there, and I think that that's going to be a significant factor with him. But I think other than that, I think he's going to just do with what got him there.
Tony, was there anyone who you thought really improved their roster at the trade deadline?
I love what Oklahoma City did. I loved a couple of things. I love what Oklahoma City did when getting Taj Gibson. I really like what Houston did with getting Lou Williams. I like what the Brooklyn Nets have done. They've cleared out some contracts and some dead space, even though that's not going to show on the scoreboard and in the standings. I think that they're back on the right track towards respectability. And so I do like what a couple of people did. And, you know, but I really do think that Oklahoma City was a really big winner today in the trade deadline.
Does Lou Williams do enough for what Houston's got going on offense now to change your mind about whether or not the Jazz and Houston are a good matchup for the Jazz in the playoffs?
You know, I mean, it's the same style. I mean, you know, they're going to, you know, at the end of the day, they're a team that's going to do two things. They're either going to shoot threes or they're going to shoot layups. You know, so I think, you know, Lou Williams doesn't change that as much. He just adds to the three-point shooting and, you know, the offense that they have. I think they have, you know, maybe the best offense in the league outside of Golden State. But, you know, in terms of, you know, whether the Jazz can match up well with them or not, I don't think that he, you know, changes that significantly one way or the other.
You can find him on Twitter at TripJazz. Read him in the Salt Lake Tribune. Our Utah Jazz insider, Tony Jones. Great stuff, Tony. Thanks.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There he is, Tony Jones, giving us a good breakdown on the Utah Jazz. I agree with him. I like what Oklahoma City did. They added a power forward in Taj Gibson to give themselves a little bit of help while Enes Kanter is hurt. And then they went out and added another shooter in Doug McDermott, though he certainly never turned out to be the guy we thought he would be coming out in the lottery for the Chicago Bulls. But I still think it's an upgrade on what they had.
And now some late developing news here. It sounds like the Mavs have waived Deron Williams and are working on a buyout with him. He's reportedly got interest in signing with the Cleveland Cavaliers to close out the season here with one of those little double paychecks where you get the buyout, and then you get the new team, and then you also might put a ring on that finger. I'm not sure he's any better on offense than Kyrie Irving, but maybe a little bit of depth now.
At the point guard position. They wanted another playmaker, and they'll get that in Deron. Deron can really play. I mean, he's just a really good basketball player. He's not the guy that the Jazz had when he was an all-star anymore, but he's a big body. He's a pretty decent defender still at times. He's got a lot of experience. So I think that's a good pickup if the Cavs are able to end up going out and getting Deron Williams after the trade deadline, signing him for whatever the remainder of the season will cost, $100,000. And then you're right, we'll see if he reaches a buyout with the Mavericks or if they just pay the rest of his salary to not have him on the roster anymore as they're trying to gear up to get their draft pick as high as possible.
Well, if the Mavs didn't just buy you out, then save money on propane by going to Wasatch Propane. The best price on propane around 201 West and 2700 South in Salt Lake City. It's Wasatch Propane. They'll even recertify your tank for your barbecue or for your vehicle. It's Wasatch Propane.
Coming up next, Wasatch Whip Around. We're going to talk to Jeremiah Jensen, get the breakdown on the latest with the Utah Jazz at the trade deadline. We'll talk to Jared Lloyd about BYU as spring football starts on Monday. Stay tuned, Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAN.
Gunther and Ben in the app.
Gunther Ben, 1320 KFAN, 326. Happy Thursday. He's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson.
Oh, man, it's been a rough one for me today. You see, I got publicly shamed earlier in the day at my son's school.
Well, what happened?
I had quite the incident. You see, there was a bunch of cars.
Did you bring your shotgun to school again?
No, it was even worse than that. No, there was a bunch of cars lined up to get into the entrance, and so I went in the other lane, which is technically the exit, and pulled into the back to park so I wouldn't cause a traffic jam.
Sure.
I don't want to hang out in the street. And as I was doing that, one of the other parents, a mom, started mouthing to me very hard. I could tell.
You're doing it wrong.
She said, "You're not supposed to do that."
Yeah.
And I could tell, I couldn't hear her. She was in her car. I was in my car. But she mouthed it so mom-like that I kind of realized right away, you're mouthing at me. You're upset. You're pointing at me. You're saying, "You're not supposed to do that." She must have said it 10 times. "You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to do that."
You weren't supposed to do that.
She did say that to me.
You ever see that movie Mr. Mom with Michael Keaton? I mean, that exact scene happens. He's dropping his kids off at school. I think he goes in the out, and a mom pulls up to him and shames him and says, you're doing it wrong.
I got shamed, and I realized, where did the pendulum swing in her favor here? I mean, I didn't break the world's biggest rule here. I broke a small rule.
She's done it before.
Exactly.
That's the only advantage that she has over you.
Well, but that's the thing is a lot of other parents have done this. I've seen this before. It's a small parking lot.
It seems like a really natural human thing to do, to try and not block everybody because you're trying to pick up your son.
It's not dangerous. I wasn't speeding. I was going a mile an hour, and she drove past me, and she shamed me. She gave me the "you're not supposed to do that." Now, I've never met this woman before, but I'm anxious to now. I mean, I'm sure it's just going to be very pleasant. When do I get to do that to another parent? I mean, I don't care how old that person is. I mean, if our kids are both going to the same school, does that mean that I can publicly shame people now at the school?
You need Redbird to start working more so you can be a stay-at-home mom. And then once you become that, you can become a professional mom who also gets to enforce the rules at school.
Yeah, I didn't know there was rules that you could enforce on other adults at school. Man, I got shamed. I had to go see the principal today. I'm all stressed out. I hope my wife does.
That's what we had. What did you have growing up? When we got some people call it a demerit or a demarcation or whatever it is. We had a discipline at my elementary school. That's what they were called. It was a little pink slip. I got one, I think, in my life. I think I got one because we were running. And remember how they started at some point just big government takeover? They started painting the map of the United States.
Yeah, that's on every school.
At every school. I don't know why they did that.
You guys are running across the U.S.
Classic bureaucracy taking over state funds.
Show us what borders really matter.
When it gets wet, it's fun to go run and slide on it. And
you guys were sliding on your bums there?
On our feet. Oh. And they gave us a discipline for that. And I thought, that's a way to take fun out of recess.
That's interesting. No, I spent basically the majority of my elementary school in the principal's office.
Oh, really? You were a troublemaker?
No.
Fighting?
For fighting. Yeah, because I was getting bullied by kids.
You were a chubby kid.
Yeah, Kevin Drain and Andrew, whatever his name was, used to pick on me all day, every day.
The swamp.
Yeah, well, they wanted me to drain the fat in my swamp there. Anyways, though, back to school. I hate school. I hate all forms of public and private education.
I like school.
I told my wife from the get-go I was not in favor of dropping our kid off at school. And now if I'm going to be publicly shamed, I'm even less in favor of it. Good thing, though.
It's almost warm. Your kid can start walking to school. He's 3.
Man. It was the first time I've been publicly shamed there. It was a sad day for me. I got to clean up my act, or maybe I'll just go in the exit every day to see if it drives her nuts.
Shame on you.
I deserve that.
Whip around.
I deserve that.
Gunther and Ben are taking you inside the headlines with the opinion makers and news breakers on the biggest stories in sports. This is the Wasatch Whip Around.
Wasatch Whip Around is brought to you by Tosh, your orthopedic specialty hospital, Utah's premier sports medicine and orthopedic center, providing comprehensive care for your entire family. Give Tosh a call, 801-314-4100. First up on the Wasatch Whip Around, find him on Twitter at JJ Sports Beat. Catch him on KSL Sports Beat. It is Jeremiah Jensen. Jeremiah, the Jazz stand pat at the trade deadline. Is that a mistake? Did they miss out on any major piece you think they could have added?
I don't think so. I mean, if you look around the league and the deals that got done today at the deadline, they're pretty underwhelming. I mean, maybe with the exception of Oklahoma City getting Taj Gibson, which I like, somebody that maybe would have been able to give the Jazz some more added depth at the power forward position, which is one of the needs they have right now, with the guys they have at point guard or at power forward not really producing what they thought they would get out of them this year. And maybe, you know, backup point guard. I know the Deron Williams thing was out there. And that's still a possibility. If the Jazz wanted to do that, if he gets waived, they could try to pick him up that way. They'll probably have some competition there with Cleveland and maybe Atlanta. But I think the Jazz are fine standing pat. I think they like where they're at. And there really wasn't something out there today that I saw that did get done that was really, I thought was really great. So, you know, they'll be fine.
Do you see the NBA championship coming back to the West this year? I mean, obviously Golden State's got a resume, but are there other championship contenders in the Western Conference, in your opinion, this year?
Well, I think we always sleep on the Spurs, don't we? But you look at what they're doing this year, and they look pretty solid. And then, you know, that might be it. I don't think Houston at the three seed is that. I actually think the Clippers are better than Houston if they get healthy. That's my opinion. But in a playoff series, I think the Clippers would beat the Rockets. But outside of that, I think there's three teams in this league right now that can win the NBA championship, and two of them are in the West. And you know, Cleveland's still there. I don't think. Well, I know a lot of people are talking about Boston making the finals. Can they win it? I don't think so. I don't think they're close yet. But you know, I think it's those three teams, which, you know, I think a lot of people could argue takes a lot of drama out of things. But right now, it's a top-heavy league, and I still think those three teams—the Spurs, Warriors, and the Cavs—are the only teams that really have a realistic shot at winning it.
Find him on Twitter at JJ Sports Beat. Catch him on KSL Sports Beat Channel 5. Great stuff, Jeremiah. Thanks.
Thanks, JJ.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Jeremiah Jensen, next up on the Wasatch Whip Around. Find him on Twitter at Jared R. Lloyd. Read him in the Daily Herald or at CougarBlue.com. It is Jared Lloyd. Huge announcement from BYU this morning. They got a home-and-home coming up with Tennessee. How does this game stack up with some of the other big names that they've got coming in?
You know, I like these games. And, you know, the years are a little bit separate as far as when the games would be played, 2019, 2023. You know, those years mean... Excuse me, that a lot can change between now and then. But, you know, to get this type of opportunity, BYU is getting a lot of games against really good opponents, and there's some bad ones sprinkled in there, it's true, and, you know, they kind of have to take what they get as an independent, but these are the opportunities that they have to make the most of. And this game against, you know, this series against Tennessee is a great one for BYU. It'll be against an SEC team, and, you know, it'll be one that people will pay attention to and be interested in. So, you know, these types of games are the ones they have to stay relevant as far as being an independent program.
BYU is going to have some open spring practices down in St. George in a few weeks. Is it just a coincidence that the projected number one prospect in the state next year happens to play high school football down there in St. George?
I doubt it's a coincidence. These these college coaches know what they're doing. But, you know, BYU talked about how they like doing the fan fest. They like getting out and going places. And since they had this opportunity, they decided to, you know, take advantage of it and have an event down in St. George. And it's a chance for the guys to get away. They said they're going to do some things, have some fun with the players during that time frame, as well as getting some work done. So, you know, kind of a good combination for BYU at that point.
Find him on Twitter at Jared R. Lloyd. Read him at CougarBlue.com. Great stuff, Jared. Thanks.
Thanks, Jared.
Thanks, guys.
Wasatch Whip Around brought to you by Toshi Orthopedic Specialty Hospital. For more information about sports and orthopedic injuries, follow the experts at Tosh on Facebook or Twitter at Tosh Utah.
This is a genius ploy by BYU. It is not it's not underhanded or shady at all. It is an absolute full-court press going after Penei Sewell, the 6'5", 340-pound offensive tackle who is just a mauler. He's already got all the top schools coming after him. I mean, SEC, Big Ten, every top conference, Pac-12, you name it, he's got all the offers. Everyone in state knows about him. He's a great player. And what a genius move by BYU, because really, what's the downside to it? Of course, BYU has fans in St. George, so they can go put their product out there. They can put their product right out in front of Penei Sewell, and even if he says no, what's the harm done? It's a few-hour bus ride for BYU, little change of scenery. It's right now scheduled for a Monday and a Friday deal, although the times are still pretty tentative. I don't know if BYU can practice at this kid's high school, but Well, where does he go to Desert Hills? I think why wouldn't they try to get at least one practice at his high school?
I think I've only ever driven through St. George. You do it on your way to Vegas, right? It's not a big town, so yeah. If BYU's in town, Penny Sewell will be around. He will see BYU play. He'll get to know Kalani Sitake. Yeah, he'll be able to watch the practices, I'm sure, if he wants to. You make those types of offers to kids, or you make yourself available to those kids. The same way if you go up to Utah spring football, you'll see former Utah players. You'll see young high school kids. Sometimes they're down on the sidelines walking around. It's a good way to show off your program and what it's like to be on the team.
And also, BYU can hook up a bunch of his teammates and friends with tickets and passes, and they can all do that thing too. And Penei Sewell and all the other prospects that go down and do this, they can feel like the big dogs there, and you can hang out and experience that. It's very unique. BYU knows what they're doing.
Yep.
I mean, Michigan did this a couple of years ago, went down to Florida and hung out. It's sort of the thing you should do now in college football if you have the resources.
Coming up next, football at 50. We're going to break down the latest with BYU traveling down to St. George and their matchup with Tennessee. Stay tuned. Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAN.
Gunther and Ben in the afternoon.
Facility. Okay, move it up. And remember, south to drop off, north to pick up.
Pick them up. Okay, it's a good system.
South to drop off, moron!
Gunther and Ben, 1320K fan, 343. That's a classic scene, the carpool scene from Mr. Mom. You got Mr. Mom this morning dropping your kid off at school.
Man, I'm the number one domestic terrorist here in the country. I got hit with a "you're doing it wrong."
You're doing it wrong.
My kids were telling me.
Yeah, your son recognized you were doing it wrong as
no,
well.
No, I mean, I went in through the exit. I entered through the wrong way, dropping the kids off. There was plenty of room, but one of the moms on her way out, I could tell she was mouthing at me that I'm not supposed to do that.
She call you a moron?
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty aggressive maneuver there. I mean, she was saying, "You're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong."
It's even snowy out today, just like the scene. It's perfect.
Look, I was just trying to not block the entrance, so I went in through the exit. My word. I mean, I didn't realize that I was going to ruffle so many feathers here now. You know, we're just talking about two cars passing by each other. I got run off the road earlier, too, in my own neighborhood. This guy passed me in my own neighborhood in a one-lane road, too.
Wow.
It was just a bad day on the road for me.
He's been going slow.
Just over.
Really
I was going slow in my mother-goosing neighborhood with
my
children.
It's a nice thing to do, yeah, because there are children, not just your children in the car. There are other children on the streets.
It's snowing, and I had kids in the car. I'm sorry if I was only doing 20.
But that's what you get for living in the inner city. Kids just playing in fire hydrants in the streets.
That's what I've always said to my wife. Let's put our kids in the inner city by a fire hydrant and just leave them there. They'll
open
be fine.
It up. Get a little water midday to cool down.
Can I ask you a question, Ben, because your brother lives in New York? What's the difference between baseball and stickball?
Well, one of them you play with like a broom handle, and one of them is for the rich kids who actually can afford a baseball.
So is stickball
like an old bag of garbage?
Just baseball rules, but with like pieces of garbage instead of a baseball bat?
More underage cursing.
Well, and I'm a big fan of that.
Foul-mouthed 13-year-olds.
Oh, man. Well, I remember myself as a young kid, me and all my buddies would curse and have this different language when we were by ourselves. And then, obviously, when we were around adults, we would clean it up there. But I think most kids kind of do that, right? Like the Rugrats, you talk differently than when you're around your parents.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, my mouth changed at second grade. First, I started talking like I do now publicly when I was in second grade privately.
Just spouting liberal nonsense?
This horrible nonsense.
Talking about Bernie Sanders all the time.
Bernie, higher tax rates.
Stop to drop off, moron!
All right, stop honking at me. My children are in the car, lady.
BYU's got a great game coming up.
Pop out of your Skechers.
Against Tennessee. They'll go on the road and play at Tennessee. In the 2019 football season. I believe Tennessee comes back in 2023, so a few years out before we get to see him at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. But this is a great get for BYU. Anytime you get to play an opponent like this who When was the last time Tennessee didn't start the season ranked in the top 15? I love these high-profile games for BYU.
Well, it's a home-and-home, most importantly, and BYU's trying to schedule as tough opponents as humanly possible each and every year, trying to get them in Provo. BYU's not afraid to go on the road either, but they've got to get as tough a team as possible on that schedule because there are going to be teams every year that are built in that are not the most dominant teams in college football. I love the series that BYU has set up with Hawaii. I think games against Boise make a lot of sense. BYU, Utah State, they can all play each other. You know, that's half the battle right there. BYU can continue to try to build relationships with Missouri, with Michigan State, with Tennessee, Virginia, maybe. If Bronco changes his mind or if Bronco ever moves on again, you could see that window open up again. BYU's got games built in. They had a great matchup with Nebraska. They've built these relationships with UCLA, with Arizona. All's well on the horizon when it comes to independent scheduling, but you're just going to continue to see this gap grow in college football. And in 5 or 10 years, the issues will be exacerbated, and BYU's going to be much more out there on an island. Now, the nice thing is BYU's in a very good financial spot, even if they are on their own, even if they are independent for the next decade. They're in a better spot than any other independent team other than Notre Dame.
BYU also announced a home game against Idaho State. I don't mind this either. If you have some Idaho high school kids wanting to watch that game, maybe they grow up around Idaho State and they're going to watch BYU crush them. It's a win for BYU, and then you get a chance to, again, recruit in Idaho where they got Tanner Mangum and Taysom Hill.
Idaho State was founded in 1901.
I didn't even know Idaho was a state in 1901.
How many people were in Idaho in 1901 that needed to go to college? What was it like when it snowed in 1901? What did you eat? Did we have we barely had electricity at that point. Did we have refrigeration? I mean, barely. What are you supposed to do, live on campus? Is it a commuter campus? What was college like in 1901?
The Civil War ended May 9th of 1985. So, yeah.
1895.
1895? 1865. May 9th of 1865, the Civil War ended. So, yeah, you were about 40 years past the Civil War ending.
And you're talking about malaria most of the time.
Dad, I'm packing up my books. I know you were in the Civil War. I'm going to a liberal arts university called Idaho State.
I'm
going to
get my cartography degree at Idaho State.
I'm going to be a philosophy major, Dad.
I'm going to leave now, and I'm going to get there by the spring.
What?
You see, it takes 2 months to walk there.
Hell. Are you talking about?
The dad's going to say, what is a tuition? What do you mean? Dad, I need $5 for my 4 years.
I walked here from Savannah, Georgia, and now you're going to college.
Why?
I've got all this land, a farm. We have 3 cows and 8 chickens.
What are you going to do with
you're
that big old degree?
Idaho State.
You're
going to
feed the cows with
football.
That degree? You want to be a football player, son? What the hell is football? It's 1901. Why don't you go hang out with Nikola Tesla? He's got some wild ideas until JFK assassinated him.
But the game for BYU.
Well, Tesla might have been assassinated.
Not by JFK. I don't think JFK was born by that point.
All right, I got one detail wrong.
Big one, though.
So sue me,
who
Ben.
Murdered him. BYU adding Tennessee is a huge game. We'll talk about it more coming up here in about 10 minutes. Right now it's time for Football at 50.
One detail.
1320 KFAN brings you Football at 50. BYU, Utah, the National Football League. Every hour at 10 till the hour, it's Football at 50 on 1320 KFAN.
Football at 50 is brought to you by Jolly and Jolly, the father's rights attorneys. Let Jolly and Jolly be your voice in a system that's twisted the very notion of equal justice for all. Jolly and Jolly, 801 Fathers. It's Jolly and Jolly, 801 Fathers. BYU taking their spring football down to St. George. I think one, it's a reason to play in some warmer weather, but B, you can go down and play in front of the most highly touted recruit in the state of Utah in 2018, Penny Sewell.
Well, and springtime is one, along with the fall, it's one of the most unique aspects of our state. So Provo, Utah, or St. George, Utah, it's all going to be beautiful in the next few weeks at various points. But yeah, if Penny Sewell didn't go to high school down there in St. George, I don't think BYU would be down in St. George. I think it's a marvelous plan. I think Penei Sewell is the best recruit we've seen in our state in a long time. I mean, he's Holote Nata good. He's an offensive lineman, sure. But he's 6'5 and 340, and he just embarrasses kids out there on the field. Really, he shouldn't be allowed to play this next year. There's no reason for him to go out there and do it. He's just going to injure kids. Penei Sewell is a true freak of nature. He's got offers to all the top schools. So I love that BYU's taking advantage of this. Even if it doesn't work, it's a few hundred bucks in gas for the BYU program to get down there. But it also shows that BYU can do this, because it's not just the gas money. There's hotels. There's a lot of pomp and circumstance that's going to go into this. It sounds like BYU is going to have a public practice down there on a Friday. It's open to the public if you want to go down there. What is St. George from where we are now?
What, 4.5 hours?
Okay.
It's closer to, certainly closer to probably Phoenix, closer to Tempe than we are.
Get a couple of bros after work there on, well, I guess you'd have to maybe miss work on Friday.
You're probably about
like
equal distance to Los Angeles from where you are now. So, yeah, Penei Sewell is not a guy, just because he plays in the state of Utah, that I would assume either BYU or Utah are the odds-on favorites just because he's in the state. He's so far away from where both of these schools play that the schools in Arizona, the schools in Los Angeles, and then the Big Ten teams, SEC teams that have already jumped and given him offers will have just as good a chance to land him, I would suspect.
BYU and Utah have much different breeding grounds to offer. Salt Lake and Provo are much bigger cities than St. George. Certainly Salt Lake is a metropolis compared to St. George. Now, I don't know anything about Penei Sewell, but I would imagine growing up in a city like St. George, you want to get out and you want to go far, far away, whether that is, you know, in your own state, whether that is going up to Michigan or Ohio State. That's going to depend on the type of person that he is and the type of career and situation that he wants to be in. But you've got to respect BYU making a play for this kid. And you know, it is going to cost the team quite a bit. There's a lot that goes into this, but BYU's going to gain a lot of publicity for this. And there's a lot of chances for the players to help the team out with social media, and they're going to be hanging out together. Maybe they're going to go golfing. You don't just drive to St. George practice and then drive back. I mean, obviously there's going to be other events in between, team-building experiences. Bronco used to let the guys float down the Provo River, an inner tube and stuff. I'm sure it's like a level one rapid. It's not all that dangerous. Maybe there's some of that in St. George. The Virgin River down there, you can go float down that thing.
BYU will conduct one practice in St. George this spring. That's going to be the St. George practice on March 17th, and then they'll have one spring practice March 25th that are going to be open to the public. Otherwise, all practices are going to be closed. So I thought, and I think we talked about it a little bit on the show, that BYU would make their spring a little bit more available, allow fans to feel again like they're a little bit more a part of this team, where last year they were trying to add so many new things that it was closed. I'm surprised Kalani Sitake is keeping the blinders on for BYU fans.
I am too, and that's why you and I went out and got a drone this year. Okay. And we're going to fly it over a lot of BYU practices. And if you're wondering if we're going to broadcast the footage, oh yeah, we are.
Big time.
Live, right on the internet. We're going to get around the
live
system.
Instagram Live.
Now, the thing is, we're going to have to fly that thing with a lot of clever tactics, because Greg Rebel, the media director down there, the czar of BYU, has said that he will shoot any drones out of the sky.
He's a sharpshooter. He's like Atticus Finch out there. He's not willing to take a drone down when he sees one running wild in the streets.
Yeah, and Greg no longer has to count with an abacus. He now uses a calculator instead, too. So good point on that one. But Greg has said that he will act aggressively towards any drones he sees, and he will shoot down, without question, any drones over practice. You and I will be looking forward to the spring game. Certainly like last year, you and I got to sit in row 90 because there were 20,000 fans at the spring game. And we say that because it shows you that BYU's fans want to show up to spring practices. Hey, they want to be a part of it.
I parked 2 miles away from the stadium. It was my fault that I was late, but then again, I had to park 2 miles away from the stadium to get to go watch the game.
And most other teams don't have that situation. Yeah, maybe for one spring practice.
Ohio State does.
Yeah,
Alabama
Ohio State. Bama does that.
Texas might.
BYU is in really elite category when it comes to its fan presence. I don't think locking them out does any good. There's no more secrets anymore in college football. Every play is digitally cataloged into a file. You can access it year-round.
There is nowhere near as much excitement about this spring football this year as there was last year, I think, for BYU fans, because there was a lot of excitement about Jamal Williams coming back. There was a lot of excitement about Taysom Hill potentially coming back. And then, of course, adding Kalani Sitake and Ty Detmer were just enormous stories. I think this will be a better spring football period, though, for BYU than last year's was. I think you're going to get more development this year from BYU than you saw last season, despite the fact that you added these names. This is a nice start towards building the true future of Kalani Sitake and Ty Detmer and Elisa Tuiaki, whereas last year you were just trying to bookend that weird ending of the Bronco Mendenhall era with Taysom Hill and Jamal Williams.
Kalani's molded a lot of his style after Kyle Whittingham, and don't forget that Kyle Whittingham retracted over the first few years as a coach. He redacted access. He limited the amount of time guys could watch practice. He installed these weird borders over the fences so you couldn't even see through the fences at practice. Maybe Kalani, even though he's a really nice and popular guy and social guy, maybe behind the scenes Kalani's going to say, no, wrap these fences in black tarps. I don't want any access. Make this thing into Fort Knox.
Coming up next, who are the winners and losers at the NBA trade deadline? We'll talk to Dan Feldman from NBC Sports, and we'll get a breakdown on BYU heading to Tennessee. Stay tuned. Guther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAN.